This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
The Cubs announced their 60-man roster Sunday night, but the White Sox decided to wait till today. The names of both teams are likely to include highly regarded prospects who aren't ready yet for the majors. How big is the risk of including those prospects and exposing them if an outbreak occurs? Do you think either team will require more than 40 players to complete 60 games?
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, I think that it's a little crazy that we don't have the Sox roster yet, and I'm curious about it. So we'll learn that soon. It's out, so we'll find out. I don't mean it's out. I mean it's been submitted, presumably. So I think you are having a balance here, and I really don't think there is a balance. I think that you want your prospects to be playing, and you worry that some of your top prospects won't get to play baseball this year, so you want them with you, presumably on the taxi squad. I'm talking about, you know, the guys at Double A, maybe a Single A player here or there. You mentioned Andrew Vaughn, David. I think that's one I'll be interested to see, but I think he has to play. They're expecting him to be arriving next year, so maybe you force a guy to arrive early or at least keep him with that prospect pool because of where he is in terms of ready to graduate to the major league. So I think it's different when you're evaluating top prospects at a certain age versus top prospects that that you believe are going to graduate to the big leagues in a year or two. I think 40 might be the tipping point. I think if you need 40 players to get through 60 games, that is not a good sign. That means a lot of players are either injured or ill. And it's supposed to go from 30 to 28 to 26, right? And instead, you're talking about moving guys in and moving guys onto lists, etc. I think if you get to 40 players, that's a really bad sign as to where you are and where those players are. So that might be the tipping point right there. I hope that neither team requires that, and I fear that both will, and that maybe we won't get through this thing as a result. But I'm going to be hopeful about it. I'm going to say, no, they won't require 40 players because that's a tipping point to me.
Yeah, that's why when you're talking about the language in what Rob Manfred said about shutting down the season, you look at that kind of ominously. It's like, okay. At the end, then, when you talk about the integrity of the game, are you going to have minor leaguers manning major league positions in games of meaning, you know, deciding down the stretch what to do here? And that's not going to be good for anybody. I found myself counting pitchers, you know, in terms of how many pitchers did the Cubs bring, how many pitchers will the White Sox, whenever we get their list, because of what David Sampson said on Friday to us, about 35 out of 60 should be pitchers, and you wonder how prepared these teams are going to be. I think that, you know, in terms of the young prospects, I'm curious on, every team is going to have a site, a satellite facility like South Bend. I think the Cardinals are using Springfield. The White Sox are rumored to be using UIC and some other places perhaps. But what are they going to do? You know, there's going to be like 11 guys or so. Or are they just going to be staying in shape? Are they going to be taking live batting practice? What are they going to do? And how competitive will they be able to keep that edge if they're needed? And are they going to be needed? Because you can't tell me, really. It's good that the Cubs are including Miguel Amaya, their top catching prospect, and sending him to South Bend. Are you envisioning a situation where they're going to need him? Can you really rule that out? I think there's just so many questions that are really interesting to me, because your entire organization has now been reduced for 2020 down to 60 guys. And I think that if you get beyond 40, then you're starting to inch closer to that realm and that range of affecting the integrity of the competition, because how many times do you have to go beyond 40 players? So, yeah, I'm just looking forward to the White Sox releasing there so we have something else to compare to. And I am curious, I have to say, I am curious why they're waiting until today to announce it.
Well, yeah, I'm certainly with you guys there. I wish that we had both teams' rosters right now so we could compare and contrast and see if, in particular, the White Sox roster features any of those players or any surprises, really, you know, in terms of a Dane Dunning or a Jonathan Stever. Yermin Mercedes, you know, who I anticipate being on there, despite the fact that he doesn't really play a position, swing the bat, that is for sure. So it would be nice to be able to compare and contrast. As far as the Cubs roster, no big surprises on there as far as I can see. There's going to be injuries, of course. Guys are going to get sick. Guys are going to test positive for COVID-19, and you're going to have to weave players in and out of camps. And you know, if a guy does test positive, he's out for what, 10 to 14 days. He's got to test negative twice then before he is brought back into the fold. There's going to be a lot of moving parts here, and it's definitely, I think, a very distinct possibility that 40 or thereabouts will be required to get through these 60 games. You know, this is unlike anything, any baseball season, any sporting season period that we've ever seen here that I can remember, certainly. And I think it's going to maybe not surprise people how many guys are going to be moving in and out of this thing, and how much organizational depth is going to be tested. But that is part of the reality here, and part of who is going to be, you know, in contention, who's going to be having a good season, who's going to be who are going to be some of the best teams. It's going to be all about your organizational depth and the ability to weave guys in and out and still maintain momentum, for lack of a better term, with so many guys being moving parts. So I'm really excited to see what the White Sox have to put out today with their roster. Wish they would have already done it, like I said. But as far as the Cubs roster, no big shocks here to me.
In the conversation about COVID-19, it's a big risk for these prospects. It's a big risk for any player on the roster. They are at high risk of contracting coronavirus and being exposed to it. There's no doubt about it. To the next question about will either team require more than 40 players to complete 60 games, I think it's a very high possibility. We are going to see a lot of injuries on the Cubs. We're going to see injuries on the White Sox. We're going to see a lot of injuries across baseball. It's going to be the reality because of this bizarre training camp situation where you ramp up for training camp and then you stop for months as the entire nation and the world goes into a lockdown because of a pandemic. And then you come back and you're going to have another spring training 2.0 and then get right into things. There's going to be injuries. If I had to put a bet on it, I'd say there are going to be more injuries on an older Cubs team. It hurts me to say as a Cubs fan, but yeah, I would say there's going to be more injuries on an older Cubs team than the White Sox.
Yeah, injuries I think are going to be an issue. I would expect the Cubs to have to use more players than the Sox. I also think if somebody gets off to a bad start, a team, not necessarily a player, but a team, I think you'll see players dropping like flies, as they like to say. I like Mully. Mully mentioned it in the first segment of the show. I was not refreshing myself with lemonade, as David had suggested, but was really digging around and was confused that, okay, there was a 3 o'clock deadline, and I can't find any information. it wasn't MLB's decision whether or not to give it to the rest of us, the media and the fans, but I was just trying to figure out like what the cloak and daggerness to all of this is, and maybe we'll find out later today that there's going to be this big shocking surprise, and here we go, and hopefully it is, and it's something that's juicy and we can talk about it. But I'm just excited that there's rosters now, and it's interesting that the Cubs are having their three top people in South Bend, so they're at least going to be around some of the more talented players and more talented people. Maybe they'll, but again, you don't want to see one of the top prospects playing on your team non-pitcher, because that means, as we mentioned, injury. So that's the only way those kids are going to be up here. But I'm excited. It's a roster, and now it's time to bring on a schedule.
It's a great question.
Did the White Sox signing of second-round pick Jared Kelly make their 2020 draft a success? Were you ever concerned it wasn't going to happen? And what is the timetable for his advancement through the minor leagues?
Well, I'm going to tell you, and this may sound a little meatball-y, but it's okay. The best sign I saw about Jared Kelly over the weekend was on the Twitter machine, and to see him tweet out a photo of him at Guaranteed Rate Field, it appears, and he is in a suit and tie. And it's Friday, and it's 90 degrees. It's in June, and he's in a suit and tie. This kid's a professional already. He's coming to work. He knows how to make an impression. And that, besides that, oh, by the way, he can throw 98 pretty effortlessly. And he is a first-round talent that dropped into the second round because of money. And the White Sox were willing to pay it. This, to me, is somebody who you talk to people, as we have on this show, and you talk to people off the air, foundational talent. He is somebody that you can look at as a possibility, if he stays healthy and fulfills this potential, could be in your rotation for a while. That's exciting. And I think that everything about this kid that you hear, you like. He's not going to the University of Texas. I'm looking forward to talking to Mike Shirley, 820, just about what it was about the White Sox that allowed them to work out this deal when other teams must have wanted to. Other teams must have tried. But he fell to them. They took him. They worked it out. They're going to benefit from this. I hope that they're deliberate. I hope that they are smart. I hope that they don't rush him. I don't think he is like Garrett Crochet in that you don't envision him coming up this season potentially to face one or three hitters in a situation that makes a lot of sense. You want him to go through the minor league process. You want him to be a guy that learns and dominates on every level. And you want him to be a guy that you see the next time he is at Guaranteed Rate Field, he can wear whatever he wants. If it's a White Sox uniform, you're going to be excited on the South Side.
I'm going to be curious. I know this sounds crazy, but I wonder if they're going to put him in their prospect camp, add him to the group. And the only reason I wonder that is because on draft night, and I've heard this before, that they're kind of worried about his weight. That, you know, he's great, but you just can't add more weight to his frame. And he is a big dude, and he fills out that suit. So you do kind of wonder if maybe it might be a good idea to have him there just so you're getting him working out and staying in shape and all that stuff. And I again, I'm not trying to be funny in any fashion. Believe me, I really hope that everything's going to be okay with the kid. But, I mean, look, that was their entire strategy. And we'll talk to Mike Shirley about it. But they had to sign this kid because everything they did after that, and they now have signed their entire draft class, but the last three players were kind of undervalue signings because they needed to get the money to give to Jared Kelly. The price of playing poker was like, what, $3 million? And he basically, the slot would be like 1.58. So they obviously talked to him. They obviously understood what they had to do. And they obviously went out and did it, which is, you know, fantastic. And I do believe that it does make their draft a success because the alternative is unthinkable. If they had drafted him and were unable to sign him and had, you know, pretty much thrown away their draft after that point in order to get signability for the second round pick and it didn't happen, that would have been a train wreck. So they obviously had a strategy. They got two stud pitchers, they believe, out of the draft, and that's a success, no question about it. Now, is it also a roll of the dice? Every draft pick is. But I think it's a successful draft, and I think their strategy worked.
So far, so good, I guess. I mean, when you get the MLB Pipeline's number 12 ranked draft prospect in the number 47 overall selection, you feel like you accomplished something there. You get him to put pen to paper and sign a deal here with the franchise. It's all good so far, but we are so far off from calling this draft a success. And we have mentioned this a little bit before, you know, in terms of the NBA draft or the NFL draft, you can get a player out of college that can be a contributor day one, you know, break camp with the team and find himself in the rotation immediately. Whereas in Major League Baseball, there are so many other developmental steps to be able to contribute on a big league level. So I'm very optimistic for Jared Kelly. I mean, he is a large, he's a big old boy, you know, if you want to go that route, because he's considering he's from Texas. He did play baseball, basketball, football. He's clearly a fantastic athlete. He throws hard. Big time promise here, and it seems like the White Sox got a great value pick, certainly at the very least. So timetable for him to move through the minor leagues, you know, no rush, certainly. We've talked about the Sox depth in terms of their pitching a lot, too, so you don't have to rush this kid at all. I'm thinking maybe a couple years from now is when you'll first see him with the big league squad. You can take your time with this kid.
Okay, first of all, I was slightly concerned that the signing wasn't going to happen slightly, but it's great that it did. The timetable, I agree with Kevin, we're still a couple years away from seeing him in my mind as well. But overall, I think signing him does constitute a semi-success, a midway success. It'll be truly successful when he reaches the major league roster and if he becomes everything that you hope he is. But signing him is a success because you're right, Mully, it would have been a total, utter failure and disaster if he ended up not signing.
Yeah, I mean, they had to sign him. I mean, that puts the draft class going in the right direction. When you only have five picks, you better, not only better you hit on three or four of the five, you better be able to sign all five. If one of those five became unsignable, especially the first or second pick, that would be an embarrassment to the organization. I know this isn't hockey, but just like saying it that way. So they had to do this. Now, you don't have fans in the seats probably this year. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But as of right now, you don't have fans. But you can bring, if I understand it right, you can bring him to this camp and not have the clock start ticking. So why not bring him to the camp and let him face some more polished hitters and be around more polished coaches? But no, I don't think he needs to be in the rotation this year. If he's in their starting rotation this year, then one of two things. He should have been a top three pick overall, period. And or the Sox are suffering injuries. So let's hope that it's not that the Sox are suffering injuries. And I'm glad for him and I'm glad for the Sox.
That's a good question. I think,
how will Cam Newton do with the New England Patriots? Will he and Bill Belichick get along? And does it surprise you that they reached an accord?
You know, I got to tell you, it just seemed like a match made in heaven from a while ago. And they got him at a bargain price. And they got a guy who is a starting quarterback. And they got a guy who you can use in a lot of different ways. And I'm fascinated by the idea of it. I remember talking to Brian Cox 100 years ago, and he was expressing how difficult it would be for him to play with certain coaches. And he said something along the lines of, can you imagine me and Bill Parcells, playing for Bill Parcells? I can't see it. He ended up playing for Bill Parcells. He and Bill Parcells were like old, you know, racehorse buddies. They would go to the track occasionally. He played well, and he developed a really good relationship with Parcells, even though he thought initially that that wouldn't be a possibility. And I think that when you think about Cam Newton and Bill Belichick, you don't see the connection there. But I'm going to predict right now that it happens and that they end up being really good, not necessarily friends, but they end up being a good combination. I think Cam Newton is utterly committed. I think if he's healthy, that's all it comes down to. Can he stay healthy? And if he can, then that is a place for him to have an unbelievable season. And it's a one-year deal, and the guy is back on the market, and who knows. But if his health is all right, that's an unbelievable signing, and the Super Bowl odds just got a hell of a lot better for the New England Patriots. I think it could be a knockout of the park, and I always felt it was going to happen because it just made sense. I mean, here's, you know, former MVP quarterback out of work trying to pick a team where he can play, team that lost Hall of Fame quarterback and doesn't seem to have a guy moving forward, can just take this guy and plug him in. Now, you know, I don't know if they're going to plug him in immediately. I don't know what their thoughts are, but he's not going there to sit. So the only reason that they wouldn't get along is if he can't play, and the only reason he can't play would be if he's hurt.
He's not a backup quarterback.
No.
Look, and injuries are always going to be the biggest concern here. Health is the biggest reason he was still on the market. They were questions that existed in March, which was why teams like the Bears, frankly, were not willing or able to take this kind of a risk on Cam Newton. When you are Bill Belichick and you have accrued the football capital he has, you can take gambles like this. You can wait it out. You can wait until June 28th to say, okay, Cam, our price, come to play for us. It is a match made in football heaven. This is going to work. If he stays healthy, this is going to put the Patriots back at the top of the AFC East. Cam Newton, motivated and healthy, is a problem for defenses all over the league. He's 31 years old. Most quarterbacks at 31. Now, it's a heavy-duty 31. There's a lot of miles on those tires. But I think that when you look at what he's capable of, when you look at what Josh McDaniels has done, frankly, Josh McDaniels is not a guy you have to like his personality. But from a football perspective, you have to give him credit for being pretty smart schematically. This is a guy that, you know, found a way with different kind of quarterbacks to make it work. Going back to Denver, and obviously with Tom Brady, it helped having the greatest ever. But the Patriots just answered their biggest question of the offseason, and that was who was going to be their quarterback. It's not going to be Jarrett Stidham, guys. Okay, gang? Can we agree on that? Cam Newton is going to Boston or to Foxborough to be the answer. If he can stay on the field, he's going to do that emphatically.
Well, I'll never forget where I was when the Jarrett Stidham era came to an end in New England. I think it's something we'll all tell our kids one day. But this is, I don't know if it's going to work out. Cam Newton, as you said, David, it's a 31, but it's a hard 31. He's been put through the ringer. His style of play, not exactly conducive to playing, you know, in the league for 15, 20 years at a high level like a Tom Brady, for instance. But it's going to be entertaining as hell to see what Bill Belichick can do. I think that that was the first thing that came to my mind. This is another storyline and another really appealing thing to hook me into the upcoming NFL season, obviously with the Bears bouncing back with Nick Foles, and you've got Brady in Tampa Bay now, and then here's something else. The NFL continually putting great storylines and great things for us to kind of sink our teeth into. You know, Cam Newton's had foot surgery, shoulder surgery, knee problems, concussion issues. It's not if he stays healthy. I mean, even if he stays healthy and he plays all 16 games, I don't know that he's going to be the same player that he was, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago when he was MVP of the league. I just don't know if that player is in there anymore. But if there is anybody that is going to be able to, you know, wring out the rest of the talent in Cam Newton, it is Bill Belichick. And I think this is going to be, for me anyway, I will be watching the Patriots as closely as I ever have.
Well, if Cam Newton doesn't amount to the Cam Newton that we knew as a success that brought a team to the Super Bowl, then, you know, it's a very low-risk move for the Patriots, first of all. So it's another great, smart move by the Patriots. But how will he do? I think if he is healthy, I think truly is the question. I think he will thrive. That's why I was kind of hoping the Bears would give him a chance and bring him in, despite the potential for, you know, not being the same after injury. I know there's a lot of questions about his health, but if he's healthy, I think he's gonna do really well. Will he and Bill Belichick get along? Look, I think these guys both have something to prove. I think Bill Belichick wants to prove he can win a Super Bowl without Tom Brady, and Cam Newton wants to prove he is still a hell of a quarterback. So I think they have that both on their minds, and they'll get along just fine. They'll do what they have to do to try and win and be successful this season. So it doesn't this move doesn't surprise me whatsoever.
This is what makes the NFL so fun and interesting. This is great. I mean, who does not find this interesting or exciting outside of Richard Sherman? And that guy can go pound sand. He got burned again, and his neck still hurts from getting beat in the Super Bowl again, just as I predicted he would all day long, him and his big yap on the football field. Will Belichick and Cam get along? That's TBD. I mean, you know, I can't wait till Belichick is asked about what Cam wore to the podium after a game. Man, we're just talking about completions and passes, and we're talking about yards and maybe some rushing yards, and we're on to the Bills. It does not surprise me. It made perfect sense that this would happen. It makes sense for both. Here's the thing, everybody. It makes sense for both sides, okay? Patriots need a quarterback, and Cam needs a big stage, and you could not have a bigger stage than this. And if you can actually, air quotes, replace Tom Brady, I mean, if they win this division, people will kind of shrug their shoulders. As long as they can win the division, people will shrug their shoulders that Tom's not there anymore. And this is the perfect guy to do that with. A guy with a chip on both shoulders out to prove to the NFL that he is still a contender for MVP. So this is great for the NFL. I love it.
Thank you for the question.
Phase one of Friday's NHL draft lottery revealed this twist. If the Blackhawks lose their first-round series to the Oilers, they immediately become one of the eight teams in contention for the number one overall pick, a 12.5% chance. What's best for the organization, beating the Oilers or losing to get a shot at the top pick, and what are you rooting for?
That's an odd twist. I did not expect that one to come out of the NHL lottery. I don't know who did the math, Gary Bettman, but I love it because it gives teams that are in the playoffs the chance to potentially draft number one overall. 12.5%, that's not a small percentage necessarily when you look at the possibility if you do lose to the Oilers. And if you lose to the Oilers and you have a shot at the number one overall pick, that means a shot at Alexis Lafreniere, and he's an 18-year-old from Quebec. He has been compared to Sidney Crosby. He had 112 points in 52 games, 6-1, 192, and he has the entire league just waiting for his arrival. This is one of those special kind of players that if you drafted, it affects your outlook for the next season immediately. And I think that when you look at the lead to the hockey news over the weekend about this story, the lead was literally LOL because of what that potentially means to teams like the Hawks, maybe the Oilers, maybe the Penguins. And yeah, he is worth the wait, and it would be a huge payoff if you were able to do that from the Hawks' perspective. That said, I want them to win the first series. I want them to be the sleeper team in the playoffs. I think it's a fascinating dilemma, and you have to ask the question. I think somebody in the organization is probably wondering that to themselves. It's a consolation prize in the way you rationalize a loss if you do lose. But no, I think you want to win the playoff series and make a run because you have a decent shot at going deep into a playoffs that nobody knows what to expect in the NHL postseason either.
Yeah, that the attitude has to be that you go out and you win in the playoffs, period, end of story. And the 12.5% chance is on the back burner. It's a consolation prize because that's what drafting high is. That's what a draft lottery is. It would be awesome to bring Sid the Kid to the Blackhawks and make that happen. That sounds great. But I would prefer to see them beat the Oilers and make a run. You play to win the game. So I don't care if they lose a shot at the top pick. It's not a great shot, and I'm rooting for the Blackhawks. So I want them to win. It's a hell of a consolation prize. If they don't get through that series, and a lot of people have picked them, it would be something phenomenal if they could pull it off. Don't get me wrong. I would be delighted with that result. But I think you play to win, and I'm hoping they can get their act together and make a little noise and make a little kind of statement.
It's an interesting twist in the proceedings, for sure. Didn't expect the Blackhawks to have a shot at the number one pick, but I would also rather see them pull off the upset on the Oilers and make a run. We've all talked about how the NHL playoffs can be a little wild, and you get a lot of upsets and you get a lot of unlikely scenarios, and maybe teams you didn't really envision making a run being able to make a run just because of the whole nature of the whole thing. So while it would be great, you know, for the long term, looking ahead into the future for the Hawks to get a top pick in the upcoming draft, I think in the present it would be a lot better for not only us and the city and all hockey fans here in Chicago for the Hawks to make a run currently in the present. I think that would be very, very good for everyone.
Based on the way the Blackhawks played before the season was put on hold, I think I'd be justified in feeling that the Blackhawks have a better chance at getting the first round pick than actually making a run in the playoffs. However, I would love to see them make a run. So I will be rooting for them to actually do that because, hey, you never know what's going to happen in the NHL playoffs.
Well, obviously, I'm rooting for them. I also have invested in the Blackhawks to win the first round series against the Oilers. But it is a nice consolation prize because this would be the best of both worlds if they were to lose. At least they got back on the ice. They got to bond for a little bit. Hopefully nobody gets hurt in that series if they were to lose to the Oilers, and then they would have that 12.5% chance. But of course, I'm rooting for the Black. Listen, yesterday there was an anniversary of one of the parades when Corey Crawford got up there with the World Wrestling Federation. Is that right, Kevin? The championship belt when he made his speech.
I believe so.
So
yeah.
I'm all for another parade maybe in August or something, or July, whenever that season wraps up. I'm all for another parade, albeit for me anyway, it would be a virtual parade. I would watch the parade over Zoom.
That's a crazy question. I ain't never been asked that one.
The Athletic reported that the NBA is considering letting players replace the names on the backs of their jerseys with statements for social justice. Will other leagues follow? Is this an inevitable move permanently or something fleeting that will pass at the end of the season?
Yeah, I think we talked about it when the Premier League came back. Every team, every jersey, the name on the back read Black Lives Matter. And it was a powerful statement, and it was a moving kind of tribute. And I would have no problem with the NBA choosing to do that sort of thing, or allowing players whatever message they want to stamp on their back. I don't know that that would hold up. I mean, in the Premier League, they did it for 1 week, and that was pretty much it. So I don't know if it needs to be that temporary, but I think that it at some point would probably go back to the way it normally is, because you know what they're after, and I hate to be as cynical as this sounds, they're trying to sell jerseys. Yeah. And I think that if you look at your favorite player and his jersey and it had a social message behind it, you may sell a lot of jerseys. You may be able to move merchandise. And that seems to be the point of the uniform and why people want to add advertising to it and all the rest of it. So from a very cynical standpoint, I think that it might be more of a one-off and an ability to sell jerseys than anything else. But I don't find a problem with it. It would be an interesting thing to do. But as I said, I think that it would revert back to whatever sells the most jerseys as quickly as possible.
Yeah, and very cynically speaking, you could almost imagine causes aligning themselves with certain players who would agree to put their message on the back of their jerseys, and you wonder if that is the direction. I hope that's not the case. I don't think that it is right now. I think this is as much a nod in the direction of what Kyrie Irving was getting at, and that is taking advantage of the platform the NBA has right now in this NBA playoff bubble, if it's able to go off as planned, and kind of reflect the state of our times, and that is a good direction. And I do wonder how much teams will have in terms of suggesting or limiting or censoring what these messages are necessarily. I think that it can be a very positive thing and a good direction for the league to go. I wonder if it will continue. I think it will depend on how it's received and how the, these platforms are used and the messages that are sent. But I like it. And I like it, and I think that the Premier League doing it was a great example of how it can work. I think that the NBA can follow that up, and I wonder if other leagues will follow if the NBA is able to do this seamlessly and kind of remove some of the cynicism that maybe we do have by looking at it and thinking, is this just about, you know, selling more uniforms and merchandise, or is this really about making a, you know, kind of following your social conscience to make a statement?
Well, of course, you know, it's about selling jerseys. I think that's pretty evident here. But, you know, giving more of a platform and more of a voice to players is always a good thing in my mind. And as you guys brought up, seeing it happen in the Premier League set the precedent for it. And not only in this particular moment, you know, with a sweeping social change hopefully taking place across the whole world, but, you know, in the future, even, Molly, you know, players in the Premier League can put their first name or a nickname on the back of their shirts, as you know. And maybe that's something that'll happen in the future as well, where, you know, you can put a nickname. LeBron can just put King on the back of his jersey if he'd like, and I'm sure they'd sell quite a few of those. So this definitely opens the door for more opportunity to make money, which is first and foremost, I think, what they're trying to do here. But like I said, giving players more of a voice, more of a platform, to me is great.
To the question of will other leagues follow, I'm pessimistic that that'll happen because the NBA is the leader in allowing players to express themselves when it comes to social issues, and the other leagues are just really lagging in that regard and way behind. So I hope we'll see it in other leagues. I'm just not very optimistic that we will. Is it? Will we see this as a permanent thing or something fleeting? I hope so. I'm going to say I hope it happens, but probably it might be something that's fleeting. But I hope they allow this type of social messaging on jerseys to become a staple. And be allowed into the regular jersey rotation, and that it doesn't just go away.
Yeah, it would be nice if the leagues allowed their players to do this. There is obviously financial consideration involved with the companies that are the providers of the jerseys or the shoes or wristbands or whatever it is that you might be putting that message on. But to think that this is about money, I think, is cynical. I mean, why, if there was money being earned off of the message of a jersey, I would hope that money would go to the cause, would go to support that, not into the pockets of the pool of money that the NBA owners and players would share. I don't even want to go down that road with this. I don't think this is about the Benjamin's baby. This is important. It would be a good thing, and I applaud the NBA for being so out in front of it, as they like to say.
312-644-6767, Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.